From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Talk about a Hollywood ending. Halle Berry became the first African-American actress to win an Oscar for Best Actress on a night that also honored Denzel Washington and Sidney Poitier. It was a momentous evening, but what does it all mean in the light of day? In this hour, a roundtable of accomplished black women share their thoughts on the significance of Halle's win for women of color. Again, with the growing unease among Catholic clergy and parishioners about the Boston sex abuse scandal. On Sunday, a priest in Washington, D.C., Reverend Percival Da Silva, called for Cardinal Bernard Law to resign and received a standing ovation from his parish. Lawrence Cunningham is a professor of theology at the University of Notre Dame. I asked him if this reflects a rising sentiment among Catholic leaders across the country.
Well, it's very hard to tell whether it represents the majority of Catholic leaders, but I think there is a widespread perception, both among clergy and lay people, that the bishops have not handled this situation very adroitly, to put it mildly.
You know that clergy and that laity well. How are these concerns crystallizing? How might they be turned into action of some kind?
Well, it's very hard, again, to tell because I don't think we've heard the end of the story. I think that one of the very clear things is that if the bishops don't come up with some kind of a consistent policy, they're going to lose, as a body, a kind of moral credibility with people.
Is there any mechanism in the Catholic Church for these concerns of the laity and clergy to be turned into policy, or is it a hierarchy above all?
Let's first of all take up the question of a bishop's resignation. That could happen from one of three ways. One would be that Rome would discreetly, as Rome always does, ask mm-hmm. the bishop to resign or to bump him into some other kind of a position. Secondly, it could come if the bishop in question, say in the case of Cardinal Law, saw that his position as the leader of the church was no longer tenable. The third would be a kind of a combination of the first two, and that is such an outpouring of dissent from many, many people, especially if it begins to be spoken of by people with some access to public opinion, begin to demand that something like this happens.
And in the meantime, how do you see the church hierarchy responding to the kind of voices that were raised this weekend? This was the priest was Percival Da Silva in Washington. He's been a priest for 30 years. He called from the pulpit on Palm Sunday for Cardinal Law's resignation. Is this the kind of statement that's likely to bring disciplinary action against him?
That would be like throwing gasoline on the fire, I think. My understanding is that he has a predominantly African-American parish and has been there for a long time and has the love of his people. And he's probably very upset, as many priests are. I mean, I think one of the really sad things about this situation is how demoralizing it is to the vast majority of good priests in this country.
What's your sense of regional levels of concern? Is this isolated in the Northeast, or is it now a real national issue for American Catholics?
I think that, say, 35 years ago, what happened was when a priest got into some kind of problem, whether it was sex abuse or alcohol problems or whatever, the response of the church was basically to pack this person off to a monastery or some similar institution, let them do penance, try to straighten them out, have them make a good confession, and then bring them back into the diocese and handling at the level of sin.
Mm-hmm.
20 years ago, when we had this terrible case down in Louisiana of a priest who I think is still in the penitentiary or maybe just got out of the penitentiary for abusing any number of children, people then began to pay more attention to therapists and getting professional help and so on, but we're still kind of trying to keep these issues under the rug. I think, in a sense, a lot of dioceses worked in that fashion. Probably there was a more sanguine view that these people could be helped by therapy than is the case today. The most tragic mistake the American bishops did was not to pay attention to a call 15 years ago to have a national consistent policy on handling these cases of child abuse, and they're paying the price for that today. It was too often handled at the local level, and depending on how competent or incompetent the bishop was, depended on the outcomes of these things.
How do you think Rome will be assessing what's going on in the United States today, then? How are they gauging, and what would be the tipping point?
Well, first of all, I think they're watching this situation very, very closely because they realize that even though I think they look upon America as not a mature church in the sense of these European churches, it's a powerful church. And there's no doubt about the fact that they would be very concerned about it and watching it very closely. Whether or not Rome would ask Cardinal Law or others who have made these kinds of bumbling decisions would be asked to resign, I really couldn't speak to that. I don't think anyone except those who are intense Vatican watchers would know. I wouldn't bet on him being elected the next pope, though, I'll tell you that.
And, of course, at one time, that was something that was widely discussed.
Yeah, but I doubt very much if they're going to elect an American to the papacy.
Mm-hmm. Lawrence Cunningham, is this a hot topic of conversation among folks in the study of Catholic theology, among the ranks of scholars? I guess let me put it even to you. Do you have a view of whether or not Cardinal Law should step down to help lance this boil?
Unfortunately, what I know of the Boston situation, I know only from the press reports. I'm not in Boston. I'm quite a ways away from it. So I don't know whether or not he's going to weather this storm or not. I suppose it all hinges on whether or not he followed bad advice but did so honestly. That is, that he listened to therapists and thought that this, in this case, the case of Gahagan, should be put into back into parish life. But let me tell you something very interesting and very important. The bishop of this diocese was an auxiliary in Boston, an auxiliary bishop, John Darcy.
The bishop of which diocese?
Of Fort Wayne, South Bend, mm-hmm. where I live, my bishop.
Notre Dame. Mm-hmm.
In 1984, he wrote Cardinal Law a letter when he was in Boston. He was the spiritual director at St. John's Seminary, telling him not to appoint Gahagan to a parish, that he was a dangerous man, that he was a predator, and that he should not be appointed to a parish, put into a position where he could harm people. And that advice was ignored. In fact, some months later, he was in the Midwest. I don't know whether there was any causal relation. I'm not trying to indicate that Law exiled him because of that particular situation.
But it does point with the way that Catholic hierarchy are moved around the country to a national conversation and awareness that's not
It also
on.
Points out the fact that John Darcy comes out of this smelling like a rose. I mean, he saw very clearly, this is a very experienced priest with a lot of seminary background and whatnot, that it was just preposterous to put this man back into a parish.
Lawrence Cunningham is a professor of theology at the University of Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana. It was an emotional Halle Berry accepting last night's Oscar for Best Actress, the first black actress ever to receive Hollywood's top honor.
This moment, so much bigger than me. This moment is for Dorothy Dandridge, Lena Horne, Vivica Fox, and it's for every nameless, faceless woman of color that now has a chance because this door tonight has been opened.
What thoughts, what emotions did Halle Berry's speech stir in you? Do you see this as a real step forward or glamorous tokenism? What message is Hollywood sending the world? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We are joined by a wonderful group tonight. First in the studio is Lonnie Guinier, professor at Harvard Law School and longtime social activist. Lonnie Guinier, it's great to see you again. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me.
And with us from Bloomington, Indiana, is Audrey McCluskey, director of the Black Film Center and professor of Afro-American Studies at Indiana University. Audrey, great to have you back with us as well.
Thank you very much.
Also from New Haven, Connecticut, is Tricia Rose, professor of American Studies at NYU. Tricia Rose, good evening and welcome.
Thank you. Good evening to you, too.
And from the studios of Vermont Public Radio, On Point news analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom.
So we've got a full house tonight and a lot to talk about. For anybody who stayed up late enough to see it, it was quite an emotional catharsis of sorts at the Academy Awards last night. I mean, first there was the amazing speech by Sidney Poitier. Then there was Halle Berry's near collapse at winning the Best Actress Oscar. And then, of course, Denzel Washington came in with the Best Actor Oscar. There's a lot to talk about. But Lonnie Guinier, you're here in the studio. Share with us first. Just give us your stream of consciousness as you watched this last night. When you heard the announcement of Halle Berry, you saw her reaction. What were you thinking as you took this on board?
I was crying. I was crying. Tears were welling up in my eyes, and my son, Nico, looked at me, and he said, "Mom, you're crying." And then he said, "Dad, Mom's crying." And the irony is that both my husband and my son thought there was a chance that Halle Berry might win. I thought there was no chance.
So you got blindsided. And what emotions did it open up? What was bringing on those tears? Exactly.
Her generosity. The fact that she was willing to acknowledge herself as a vessel. She said, "I am a vessel through which these blessings flow." Mm-hmm. And the fact that she was thinking about opening this door, not just for herself, but for all of those invisible, faceless women of color who also have not been allowed to go through that door.
It was an extraordinarily gracious opening paragraph or two in that speech. Of course, it gave way to the usual Hollywood thanks, but that opening did seem so honestly and earnestly emotional. Audrey McCluskey, how about yourself? Give us your reaction as you saw the award come up. You're a black woman sitting and watching. What was your response?
Well, I, in fact, was holding my breath. And I was very excited and happy for Halle, but I also was conflicted by the fact that she seemed to be taking the weight of Hollywood's pattern of exclusion. It seemed to be so much on her rather than on Hollywood itself. Indirectly, of course, but I think that Hollywood should be ashamed, not Halle Berry having to carry that weight of 74 years of exclusion. Mm-hmm. But for her, it was certainly a momentous and historic moment, and she was very generous in extending it to other black women and women of color.
You could feel that emotion rushing out. Tricia Rose, how about you? Where were you and your thoughts as you saw this all unfold?
Well, after about 11, I relocated to the bedroom and the TV in the bedroom,
right?
Because I knew I might fall asleep. But then I thought, you know, I don't think I can fall asleep with two black actors up for Best Actor.
Better not miss that one.
My husband and I stayed up till the very last minute. I just like Lonnie, didn't think she had a chance. It really had nothing to do with the quality of acting of one film or over another. It had to do with the thought that there was no precedent in my experience that it would make sense. The moment it happened, I realized just how it was almost as if I had repressed the reality of what I'd been watching.
Mm-hmm.
And that when she won, I realized how horrific it was, in a sense, that you could go through almost, you know, three quarters of a century in a country where African Americans have been at the forefront of entertainment, at the forefront of the cultural vanguard.
Mm-hmm.
And yet an African American woman in all of their talent and glory has never been able to attract a role that would display the obvious talents that these actresses have had for decades.
Which means you understood the tremors shaking Halle Berry.
Yeah, I wished I was also hoping she was a little more prepared for it, even though I was totally unprepared.
You're asking a lot.
She was so emotionally overwrought that, you know, I thought some people might miss some of the power of what she said. I can see you all didn't, and that's beautiful because, you know, you really did identify the many powerful things she said at the outset. But she seemed as surprised, and even that was a little sad to me.
Well, but 74 years or 73 years until last night of experience would seem to justify
absolutely
that surprise. We've got a great gang around the table tonight talking about last night's Best Actress Award for Halle Berry and what it means for African-American women, for African-Americans generally, for all Americans, that this line, this slender line, the silver screen line, is broken. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can join us. What does Halle Berry's Oscar tell us about race in America? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Time I know that I leave my childish playthings, their yesterday things.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And we're talking tonight about Halle Berry's win at the Oscars last night, what it meant and what it didn't mean for race in America, for Halle Berry, for African-American actresses. What do you think? What does Halle Berry's Oscar tell us about race in this country, about black women and their place in Hollywood, in society? Was it something big, something small, anything? Were you stirred? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got a wonderful group with us tonight. Lonnie Guinier from the Harvard Law School, Audrey McCluskey, director of the Black Film Center at Indiana University, and from NYU, Tricia Rose. Jack Beatty, I think you were up last night as well, and you've seen Monsters Ball. What were you thinking when you saw this beautiful young woman just shaking, as our guests have said, with the burden of what was unleashed last night?
Well, you could see why she's a great actress, and you could certainly see her charisma. I mean, she just had that X factor that marks the great actor. I was struck with the role she played. This is a movie about interracial intimacy, and perhaps it's the most candid and open display of sexual passion between whites and blacks that I've ever seen. And I think that's noteworthy, especially in the history of this medium. The movies have done grave harm to African Americans, and one movie, sort of the foundation libel movie of all, that is The Birth of a Nation in 1915. The author of the screenplay in which it was based, Thomas Dixon, said, "I want to create a feeling of abhorrence in white people, especially white women, against colored men." In this movie, which depicts the Ku Klux Klan as the savior of the South, does that. The movie was an event. 25 million people saw it within a few months. Train loads of people were brought in from the countryside to see it. One Chicago man said after coming out, "It makes me want to go out and kill the first Negro I see." There were Negro Klan, there were Klan parties thrown at the University of Chicago. In the South, it was embraced as a sacred epic, and indeed it led directly to the reconstitution of the Ku Klux Klan in the South. When it opened in Atlanta, the Klan marched down the street, and the Klan became so normalized through this film that in 1920, the President of the United States, Warren Harding, could kneel down in the Oval Office and be sworn in as a member of the Klan. And all of this, because of the fevered, clinical, racist imagination of D.W. Griffith and Thomas Dixon. So Hollywood bears a great burden when it comes to African Americans, and that's just one film.
And that's just one film, a silent film, but it spoke volumes. Hollywood's ugly gift to American racism. Lonnie Guinier, when you see Halle Berry there last night, and of course she was hardly alone last night. We had Whoopi Goldberg running the whole show. We had Sidney Poitier with his Olympian kind of demeanor and also a very generous speech, citing not only black actors that came before him, but white producers and directors who helped open the door. And of course, Denzel Washington. Does a night like that begin to dispel the kind of legacy Jack Beatty's talking about? Does the fact that people have come to this point mean that the future will be an act of dispelling, of pushing back that ugly past?
No. And I say that very reluctantly because it was certainly a moment to celebrate and it was certainly a moment of tremendous emotional release. But I say that that is a moment. And there is no way that Hollywood or the film industry can try to retell a different story about the role of blacks in this country, black women, women of color. I mean, I thought it was amazing that I didn't notice Asian presenters. I didn't notice any Latino presenters other than Jennifer Lopez. Mm-hmm. And there is still this sense of robust tokenism. You called it glamorous tokenism. Mm-hmm. And there is that element of tokenism in last night's performance. It was, in fact, a performance. And it doesn't make up for the absence of black producers, mm-hmm. of black directors, of blacks in any position behind the camera, and very few blacks even in front of the camera, so mm-hmm. that you can't tell a different story only in one night.
One night can't be entirely different. Audrey McCluskey, what about this? Lonnie Guinier says it was a performance, and I know I found myself wondering, gee, how did this outcome take place? There are, it's, what is it, 500, 5,000 members of the Academy that vote. You know the film industry. You can't really have collusion. This couldn't be an act of conspiracy. But yet, can you imagine that with all the ugly rumors going around about Beautiful Mind and bickering and this and that, that somehow people said, you know what, this would be a great year to have an African-American actress win, and here's a beautiful African-American actress in a significant role. Let's do it. How do you think this result came to be?
I think some of what you said actually probably transpired. Hollywood is very good at being self-congratulatory, and they're also very good at making overdue, meaningless gestures. And I think although this is not necessarily meaningless, it is a gesture. And it doesn't change anything from the day before. There's still the number of African-Americans or the like of African-Americans and other people of color as there was before these awards. I must say that I had never seen so many black people at the Academy Awards show in several years, and probably not ever.
In the audience?
In the audience, mm-hmm. all around. Mm-hmm. As you say, Whoopi Goldberg, just in terms of a presence there, mm-hmm. In the audience. And so that was, to me, was remarkable. But it seemed, in my way of thinking, something that was, now this is the time, let us do this, so that we can do it and move on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I hate to sound as though this was not important. I just think it's much, much too soon to grab at the future. We simply do not know. And given our history, given the history of Hollywood, I would be very, very reluctant to make any kind of grand statements about what this means.
Mm-hmm. And yet it is a wall. It is a wall knocked down, a vacuum filled. Tricia Rose, you've looked a lot at African-American culture, especially in pop culture and music. Do you think the significance of breaking through this shameful fact that this award had never before gone to an African-American, does it have a material effect on future generations of actors, actresses, on the aspirations of younger African-Americans?
Well, I do think it can certainly be a very hopeful incident, and the kind of award of this magnitude can encourage young people to feel that there is at least a slight possibility. Mm-hmm. Again, one award, you know, in 74 years doesn't get you overly excited. But again, I think when you're talking about cultural representations, it's, on the one hand, you know, you want to say that it, not much might come of this. On the other hand, if it wasn't symbolically significant, then they probably would have given one away earlier. I mean, I don't, it's not about conspiracy.
I'm not sure I know what you mean. They would, if it wasn't,
Someone would have won one by now. If it wasn't symbolically significant,
mm-hmm.
then it,
that
then
suggests it's been withheld actively.
Well, you know, and let me tell you why. I don't mean that in a conspiracy theory way at all. Mm-hmm. So let me take a moment to explain that before I get hate mail. But what I mean by that is that, you know, when you're talking about something as powerful and culturally resonant as Hollywood, not only in this country but all over the world, it's important to realize that how we value these actors has to do with our expectations about what they represent about us.
Mm-hmm.
And the best actor and the best actress and all of these very powerful cultural storytellers, which is what Hollywood really is,
sure.
Represent who we think we are. And giving that best actress or best actor award to a person of color, particularly an African American, given our history, forces a conversation about race and around what actors represent
mm-hmm.
culturally as they act, and what roles we think are worthy of a kind of universal praise. And so there's a sense in which it is symbolically quite significant. Now, I think we're in a historical moment when those symbols can be gotten around. In other words, you can give out these awards and maintain a profound system of inequity.
The
power base remains precisely what it is.
We want to dig into that, but I want to invite our callers to share with us in that digging. We've got a lot of people who want to join the conversation. We're at 1-800-423-8255, talking about what the Oscar for Halle Berry means and what it doesn't mean. Al is on the line. Welcome, Al. You're on the air.
Hi. I'd sort of like to sort of redirect the conversation to an award that was presented before Halle Berry, and even before Sidney Poitier's.
Okay, have at it, Al.
And that's the French documentary that was given the award for the best documentary.
This was about the death row.
This was about the arrest and trial of a young black youth, a black youth who is picked up as the prime suspect,
mm-hmm.
sort of railroaded in Florida for the presumed to be guilty of the murder of a German tourist.
So the stereotyping of who's guilty and the reference to the enormous population of African American men in prison.
Yeah, the documentary itself, I think, is sort of the real, you know, center of the whole evening. And if we recall what the French filmmaker said, he quoted Martin Luther King, the idea that he was born in 1963 when Reverend King delivered his famous speech that he dreamed of a day when people would be judged by the content of their character rather than the color of their skin. And this very documentary is focuses on the whole issue of how dangerous it is still to be black, poor, and young, and a male in America.
Al, that's
a
very important point.
Question?
Is that Tricia Rose?
Yes.
Please.
I just wanted to ask the caller a question. Do you think that if the director had been a U.S.-born documentary filmmaker, do you think this film would have reached this level of attention, or do you think there's something about it being an international context for this conversation that helps it gain this level of notoriety?
Well, it probably did, because originally, as I understand the film, it was meant to be aired primarily in Europe, and then it has worked its way to this country.
Al, thank you for your call. You're bringing up something really important here, and I want to turn it to Audrey McCluskey. Audrey, Al raises very directly the point, the great chasm between the beauty of chiffon dresses and the glittering jewels and everything else of the Academy Awards ceremony and the reality of many African Americans in the United States. How do you pull both of those things into mind as you look at the significance of the Academy Awards? Which is more important last night, the documentary on the young man in prison or headed there, or Halle Berry looking like $10 million plus and winning this singular award?
Well, unfortunately, not many people will see the documentary, but many, many will see Halle Berry. And I think that's the level of cultural representation that we are talking about,
mm-hmm.
although the deeper truths remain unrevealed or perhaps not very well seen by other people.
So how do you see the trade-offs between this perhaps inspiring viewers, in particular African-American viewers, let's say, and on the other hand, potentially giving a false sense of all's well with diversity to white viewers?
I'm afraid the latter, actually. I wrote an opinion piece in our local newspaper yesterday asking the question, is Oscar colorblind, African Americans and the mm-hmm. Academy Award, which I recalled an earlier historical moment, and that is when Hattie McDaniel won the very first Academy Award in the supporting role in Gone with the Wind.
Mm-hmm. Playing a Mammy.
The role of Mammy. And at that time, there was a great outcry from members of the black community really condemning her, saying that, particularly the NAACP, saying that she was really demeaning the race and institutionalized a very demeaning stereotype.
So now Halle Berry wins it for becoming, among other things, becoming the lover of a white
exactly
racist.
That's it. And I wanted to continue by saying what Hattie McDaniel said at that time, mm-hmm. as a rejoinder, I think was very apropos. And that is, she said, I would rather play a maid than be a maid. And that was a stark reality of Hollywood that Hollywood oftentimes can obscure.
Mm-hmm. But Lonnie Guinier, still to Al's point, we are struck with this image of the super glamorous actress swaddled in luxury in this setting, and the sharp contrast of that with the real day in and day out lives of so many of her fellow black Americans.
I think that's where Tricia Rose was headed when she said that, and you also mentioned glamorous tokenism, that the power base remains intact. And the real shame of Hollywood is that it's not telling those other stories. It took a French documentary filmmaker, after all, to tell the story of the young man who was facing prison. Hollywood does not see its role as justice and social change. It is not a cultural storyteller that is trying to point out the inequities in this society and then constructively suggest ways that we might change them. It's really trying to almost narcotize us into accepting those inequities. And in that sense, giving the award to Halle Berry becomes another palliative that enables people to say, well, see, the inequities are fine because, in fact, we don't notice them.
Maybe so, maybe. But yet Monster's Ball was not exactly a feel-good film. It wasn't exactly a palliative. I wonder if we get one more call before the break. Florence is on the line. Welcome, Florence. You're on the air.
Hello, this is Florence Ladd calling from Cambridge.
Hi.
I want to encourage our panelists to consider for a moment a more optimistic scenario.
Great.
Halle Berry herself recognized it as an historic moment and said that she declared the door is open. What can we do to build on this moment, to extend the moment, and to keep the door open? And I direct this expressly to Tricia Rose and Lonnie Guinea, and I'm appealing to their optimism and their organizational talents.
We hear your appeal, Florence, and we've just got a minute and a half, but thanks so much for your call. And Tricia Rose, how about you? The door's open. How is it kept open?
Well, I appreciate an optimistic take, and I think it's a grounded optimism, which is, of course, very important. The main question is going to be asking more serious questions about how can we put both women of color as screenwriters, story writers, men of color as screenwriters, story writers, as producers and directors into the system of Hollywood. Halle Berry is, in a sense, dancing on the fringes of the system. And it's an opportunity. Actors and actresses may break through and be rewarded, but the structural sense of what does it mean for us to recognize an African-American story as being worthy of a kind of collective universal praise, unless that begins to be looked at, I'm not sure I want to be too optimistic. So to be optimistic, I'd say let's really force the institution to think about what it's reproducing in its power structures.
Lonnie Guinea, we're going to have to come back after a break and get your response to that question. But it's an optimistic question and challenge. How is the door kept open? We're talking about Halle Berry, her Oscar, the first in 74 years of Oscar history for an African-American woman in the category of Best Actress. Has a wall been knocked down here or just a crack opened? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Halle Berry dedicated her award in part to Lena Horne. Here she sings for us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child.
From Boston.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Halle Berry's Oscar, the first Oscar for an African-American actress for Best Actress in the 74-year history of the Oscars. What does Halle Berry's Oscar tell us about race in America, about black women and their place in Hollywood, in society? Is it something big, something small, something in between? The question, you can join us, by the way, at 1-800-423-8255. And our question just before the break was from a listener who, like many of us, like me certainly, was moved by what she heard last night, was inspired to see history breaking open, if only for a minute, if only in this ethereal setting, and saying, how can we grab onto this and make the most of it? We heard a bit from Tricia Rose. Lonnie Guinea, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, Florence, thank you for reminding us that we have to think about the glass not as being half empty but half full. On the other hand, we also have to think, how do we fill up the glass? And it's really important, I agree, to commemorate these moments because they are few and far between and they take too long to act.
40 years between male best actors, so enjoy it. But maybe that's changing. Maybe this cycle will shorten.
But the key thing is not to just focus on who gets the awards, but who is actually doing the work. Who is telling the story? Who's choosing what stories get told? Who's choosing what roles actually are available? It's not just who gets to play a role that someone else has commissioned or imagined, but to really enable more people to be in the position of choosing the story and telling their own story and not just fitting in to someone else's story.
In that sense, who's imagining America? Who's telling us who we are? Audrey McCluskey, your thoughts.
Yes, actually the optimism I see is in black actors and black professionals in Hollywood forming their own companies, actually, staying within the system but also having some amount of control.
Are you talking about, is this a Spike Lee kind of effort or something else?
No, not necessarily. Halle Berry, for example, has formed her own production company. It's called Good Shepherd Production, and she's acquired the novel from a black woman, written by a black woman. And so we cannot expect, as I think Lani has said, that Hollywood is going to tell our story. We have to tell them ourselves. And the only way you can do that is to have some green lighting ability, the ability to say yes or no. And you do that by having your own company. Angela Bassett, also with Julie Dash, formed a company in order to put Rosa Parks' story here out. All the time that everyone has romanticized Rosa Parks, but no one has actually done her story until these two black women stepped up to the plate and said, "We are going to do the story." So I think it takes that kind of innovative, risk-taking move on the part of African-Americans and other people of color who are not represented. It's to not simply wait for Hollywood, whether it takes 30 years, 70 years, or whatever, but simply to do it themselves.
So the advice is to take the risk and get into the game. Jack Beatty, I want to bring you in here. You drew the starkest contrast between Birth of a Nation in 1915, and I know you've seen Monster's Ball. What kind of arc, what kind of progress does that describe it in your mind, Jack? Do you see the story of America already changing, even without the blossoming of full blossoming of the kind of efforts that Audrey and Lonnie are describing here?
Well, you know, in a way I do, and I want to draw attention to another movie that that Halle Berry was in this year. I think it's called Swordfish, and
with John Travolta.
Yeah, and in it, there's an interracial romance, but race is not at the crux of it. And that is to say, Halle Berry was cast in the way you'd cast a white actress. You just cast, the story didn't involve race centrally. And I'm wondering about the future of that. And I'm wondering about the effect of that sort of thing on the American imagination, where stories that don't necessarily aren't charged with race have characters who are sort of cast race neutral in a way. I wonder what our guests think of that.
Audrey, what do you think about, is there such a thing as race-blind casting in Hollywood today?
Well, I think Denzel Washington's career is the most optimistic one in terms of race-blind without being some kind of erasure. In other words, Denzel has been able to construct, very artfully so, a career in which he did not fall into the racial pitfalls. Mm-hmm. And one of the racial pitfalls for a black man is to have an interracial romance. Although you see all the license with Halle Berry, you will not see that same kind of thing, I guarantee you, with a black male and a white female actor. Mm-hmm. So there are still those barriers out there. Mm-hmm. And Denzel recognizes that that's not necessarily something that a lot of African Americans also want to see. And so he's constructed his role and his roles by playing very unbowed black men, heroic black men, such as in his biographies. For example, his portrayal of Malcolm X, which I think most people agree was actually Oscar-worthy, would certainly not probably be given the nod by Hollywood, because there are some conflicts there in terms of the idea of about Hollywood and black males and what Malcolm X symbolized. So I think there are some other kinds of things that are going on that are sort of not interrogated, but they're still very much a part of the way racial politics plays out in Hollywood.
Tricia Rose?
I think that race blindness is, you know, a kind of liberal fantasy that's actually does harm to people of color. And I think it's impossible to expect it given our history, I think it's much more interesting to figure out what we see when we see color and when we see whiteness. And I think we need to see both of those things in relation to one another. I think it's also very interesting to remember that Denzel Washington really does Malcolm X through, you know, Spike Lee's efforts, and that Halle Berry is in many ways also discovered by a more independent marginal filmmaker. And one of the questions that remain, to go back to our optimistic caller, is that, well, what would Hollywood have been able to see Halle Berry in her talent had she not, in a sense, had this nurturing cultural and creative and open space?
They gave her the beginning, the first steps.
Well, the first many steps that most artists can do in and around Hollywood, particularly white artists, without much difficulty at all. And I think it's important for us to think about, again, not these individual doors per se, because doors can be opened and closed at the drop of an eyelid, but can we build a better house?
Tricia Rose, stand by. We have callers who want to come in. Chris is on the line. Welcome, Chris. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Hi. Fine, thanks.
Just wanted to comment mainly to the fact that I felt that, and I haven't heard this in the press anywhere, that her comment regarding herself being a vessel was extremely immodest. Well, I'm glad that she won the award, and I hope it bodes well for all types of minorities in Hollywood in the future. I thought that was a very immodest comment. I know she was emotional at the time, but she also didn't really say anything about the fact that she was glad she won for her acting. It was almost as if she won because she was female and black.
Chris, let me ask if it's possible for you to put yourself in the shoes of a black female last night. Can you imagine the sense of history she might have felt at that moment? Might you have been overwhelmed in the same way?
Oh, sure. I mean, as a Jewish American, having known and knowing something about film history, you know, early on it was difficult for Jewish Americans to break into film. And, you know, I can certainly empathize. On the other hand, you know, there's someone like a Sidney Poitier who stood up and thanked the people who've helped him get there and showed a certain amount of humility in accepting the award and was humbled by the experience and acknowledged other people in the industry who've helped him get there. So.
We've got your point. Kristen, thanks for it. Lonnie, what did you think? This is a lot to ask for anyone, even an actress who's supposed to be very good at these moments. How did you think Halle Berry struck the balance last night?
I thought under the circumstances, she was brilliant. I thought she was brilliant, she was beautiful, and she was authentic. Mm-hmm. And that's how she felt. She had a political analysis of what was happening that I think was essential for her sanity, for her to understand the ways in which other equally and perhaps even more talented black women had not been given the recognition that she was now given. And that's what she was essentially acknowledging, is that there's an arbitrariness at work, and just because you're a great actress doesn't mean that you are going to be acknowledged for that acting talent. That goes back to what Tricia was saying about the importance of this as a cultural representation of who we think we are. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that statement that she was a vessel through which this blessing flowed was not just a statement of humility, but a statement of fact. This was a reality, a political reality that she had understood, having looked at the history.
Lonnie, I want to ask you about one other thing here. Jack has raised a couple times the issue of interracial discourse in the society, in film, and you couldn't help but see it last night right at the Academy Awards in the new Kodak Theater, in Sidney Poitier's family, in Halle Berry's mother, very white, right next to her in the front row. Do these things mean that somehow the country, I mean, everyone's watching this, everyone's just taking it on board, it's just family. Are these markers of social progress in the United States, in your mind, Lonnie Guinier?
Well, I think they're markers in the same way that the award is a marker. They're symbolic. But if you look at the reality, the group in this country that remains the most segregated is African Americans. Mm-hmm. You see tremendous intermarriage among Asians, less so, but still more among Latinos. And it is blacks who are living still in very segregated communities. So we can't glamorize.
It's not the norm up there.
Right. And project out from what may be happening among those who are given great access, great wealth, and also happened to be very beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And Audrey McCluskey, let me put to you, of course, there would have been last night a lot of African-Americans watching who certainly are not rich and do not live in a life of glamour. I mean, you're not among that number. But do you have a sense of how this is likely to resonate in South Central L.A., for example, what was seen by everyone on TV last night?
Well, Halle Berry usually gets get a lot of props anyway in the black community. People like her a lot, and I think she'll just redound from that, and I think she'd be well received. However, I don't think it's going to have any lasting meaning for most people. Mm-hmm. It's just these things that Hollywood that happens.
It's a great
in Hollywood.
Night. Mm-hmm. Marcus is on the line. Welcome, Marcus. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Well, thanks.
I have a kind of a comment I would like to make, and I'll hopefully my question will be germane. My question really is there a hope that we can all walk forward together, or must we walk forward separately?
Well, it's the core question, and it's a straightforward one. Tricia Rose, do you see a rallying across color lines in this kind of small step last night?
Well, you know, the problem is really not about whether or not we can walk together, but on what terms are we going to walk together? Mm-hmm. Because there are many ways in which we're already together. The question is, what are the terms of our togetherness?
Mm-hmm.
And this award doesn't really necessarily mean that we're going to change the terms of how we walk together. Now, I think it is very interesting that a previous caller was sort of concerned that she sort of overly racialized the award by connecting herself to this legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's precisely, unfortunately, that kind of logic that forces African Americans to remind everyone that the reality of the kind of systemic racism that we've known continues in very powerful cultural, political, economic, social, and all the way around devastating ways.
I have to
so
say
that's,
that
you know, that's what we really, mm-hmm. that's what we have to ask, how are we going to walk together, not if we're going to walk together.
As long as you've got people around like Whoopi Goldberg, you won't be entirely at ease. The way she came after Robert Redford a little bit there,
yeah,
sort of
I thought that
sending
was very
up
good.
The Way We Was, The Stang, Bitch Cassidy, Ordinary Peoples, and by the time she was done with her funny takeoffs on these names, I was sitting there thinking, you know, it's true. Robert Redford's films are amazingly white for such.
But you know, at the same time, his speech was very much about opening doors for creative people on the margins. So there was an irony in that he was also speaking about the containment of Hollywood, even as he himself has not really addressed questions of race very well at all.
Jack Beatty, did you stay up for that bit?
I did stay up for that bit, and I enjoyed it.
She's got a sting, doesn't she?
She sure does. And Redford is sort of the Eber white man. I mean, there he was. You know, all this. It was 40 years. We have to remind ourselves between Best Actor victories for African American men. I mean that in itself is a statement of how slowly things have changed. Because from Denzel Washington to my gosh, other actors over the years, there have been a lot of injustices. And if another 40 years more can't go by before this happens again, this has to become something like standard operating procedure, at least to have strong nominations.
Well on this night, we'll lift a glass to Halle Berry and hope that indeed that is the way things go. It was certainly it was a thrilling night last night. It was just who couldn't feel that excitement and the emotion of that moment? Our time is running down, and I want to thank the wonderful group of guests we've had tonight. Lonnie Guinier here in the studio, professor at Harvard Law School. Thanks so much for coming in. Lonnie's new book is The Miner's Canary. Audrey McCluskey is professor of Afro-American Studies at Indiana University. Audrey, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. It was a joy.
And Tricia Rose, professor of American Studies at NYU. Thank you for being with us tonight.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for doing this show.
It's our pleasure. Congratulations, Halle Berry. Jack, thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is WBU.